addictive problem. Jack Unang is able to help. He is a special counselor in alcohol and drug addiction, and he's had training. He's an expert at that. And I would be, you know, rather than, you know, I've done it too. I've got a lot of experience in it, but I would even prefer to have him be doing that because he has got even more experience. So if you can become an expert in an area, marriage counseling, you know, and basic things which you're going to encounter a lot in the church, that's wonderful, because if a session member can become an expert in one thing, he can take a lot of the load off especially of the minister of the word. And it's a very satisfying way of using the gifts that God has given you. Finances, personal finances, those are some of the basic addictions, marriage and the family, those kinds of things. Career, you know, encouraging young people what's a godly attitude towards a so-called career, or what is better called a calling, that kind of thing. And develop a library along with your expertise. The two usually go together. And then one final thing under this category is to distinguish between truly needy and dependent people. And this is where I use, you can learn a lot from physicians. Watch the way physicians work. On shepherds, by the way, you don't see too many shepherds around nowadays. It's not common the way it was when Jesus used the metaphor in the New Covenant. But you can get, there's a thing by Keller called A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. It's a wonderful book describing a real shepherd and showing the meaning of things in Psalm 23 that we would never normally know. Now, but doctors, we know. That's something that is common in our culture. And there are a lot of helpful things. One of the things that I learned from a doctor is what is called the doctrine of benign neglect. You're going to find there are some people who, as much time as you will give them, they will absorb it. And a lot of times, it's a waste of time. In other words, they're just looking for someone to spend time with them. We don't have time to just spend time with people. We just don't. Yeah, you should spend some time with a person. You go and sit and talk, go to a hospital, visit with them once a week or whatever. But there are people that are dependent type of people. We've got to be very careful. Don't give in to that. There's a kind of benign neglect. It's not that you don't love them, but in a way it's loving not to give in to their dependency. And some people will actually depend on you to where they want all their advice. You become like a surrogate husband to the widow. And you want to be very careful of that kind of thing, because it can happen. And I've dealt with this many times in the ministry myself. That brings up an issue that I didn't actually have in my notes, but never, ever, underline this 10 times in red ink, meet with a single woman alone. Now, this 100-year-old Mrs. Green is an obvious exception that common sense would lead you to understand. But we just don't do that, because you set yourself up for a problem. It may be not even a temptation. See, a lot of men will say, well, I'm not tempted. Well, they may be. And at very least what can happen is it just looks bad. You know, somebody sees a single woman and a single man come in here and they don't come out for 4 hours. What do they think? Well, maybe that the single man and the single woman went and did something in the church and there's no problem at all, but it looks bad. Okay? Oh, alone with a married woman, that's right. Yeah, when I said single, I meant alone. Yeah, better to say alone. Alone with a woman. You don't want to be... Yeah, good question. Good. That would be a tremendous mistake. No, you don't want to be single with a woman. You don't want to be alone with any woman, married or single. Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. You just, that's so, and kids, just kids. Even sad, this is sad to say, but even, you know, boys. I mean, you have this tremendous, awful thing with priests. You got to make sure with other people's kids that there's some other supervision there. Yeah, that's very, very important. And Yeah, that's right. I know. It's awful to think of. I mean, I forget about that all the time, and then I just remember what kind of a wicked, depraved culture we live in. So we have to be very sensitive to that. And we do have liability that covers me and all officers from suit for counseling and those kinds of things. But we have to put our own set of guidelines into place and be absolutely strict about it. You know, I just recently had to tell someone, I can't go and visit you alone in your home. I just can't do it. Won't do it. Won't take a chance. So, and they understood, which was nice, but some people don't. And hey, I've had been called a stuffed shirt. You know, there was someone that I knew in New York who wanted me, there's a married woman who always wanted me to go out and have lunch with her. And she said it right in front of my wife, so it wasn't like she was trying to hide something, but I just said, no, I'm not going to do that. I want to get into precedent because then, you know, someone else is going to expect the same thing, and I just will not do it. And so I was called a stuffed shirt Presbyterian. I said, that'll be a stuffed shirt and make it through a lifetime of ministry than have a disaster happen and ruin a ministry. So, but most people will understand. Christian people, real believers, will definitely understand. What? With women? Yeah, you know, I think you have to exercise your discretion there, Peter. And I wouldn't. You just have to be careful with it. That's all. I mean, if you sense, for example, that the woman is interested in you, in more than just a business way, and I would try and make it have another person present. Or if you're attracted to that person and you sort of enjoy doing that, I'd be very, very careful with that because there it's just a matter of temptation. The people in our day wouldn't think anything of it. But I wouldn't want to be rigid about that either, Peter, because in the workplace you have to. I mean, you have female employees and people that are under you or people that are your superiors, and sometimes it's necessary. But I'd be very, very careful because the dangers. Now, it's like with manners in general, because nobody knows what good manners are anymore. And now we have all kinds of a spate of courses and training on these things. Then the bars are down everywhere. There are no rules. And so a lot of people feel, well, there are no rules. And then you end up getting stung. So we've got to make sure that we follow the rules. And I would just be very, I'd be very, very cautious about that and just use your discretion. So I know I was in a couple situations like that at ProCon, and it was fine. You know, it wasn't a problem, but I was very aware that it could be if I wasn't careful. So I had to just use my common sense and instinct. Okay, we're almost down to the end of it here. Under disciplining, we've already talked about discipline back in week 7, so we don't need to go over that again. I did want to just mention these sacraments and say that this is a way of, it's a part of shepherding and part of disciplining. And obviously the scripture says, just generally under discipline, by the way, I almost missed this, is 1 Thessalonians 4:14. Part of our task is not only to comfort the faint-hearted and uphold the weak and be patient with all, but we have to warn those who are unruly. And we basically have covered that both earlier today and in week 7 in terms of the principles of discipline. But the sacraments offer a unique opportunity of oversight. And that's why the elders assist the pastor. Now, only the minister of the word may explain and administer the sacrament. That's always been a Presbyterian principle because it is part of the ministry of the word. It's just like the priest who was a teacher of the word was the one who administered the rites which looked forward to Jesus Christ and circumcision. And thus the sacraments are administered by the minister of the word, teacher. But the elders help the pastor in the Lord's Supper as it's distributed to every member because, in fact, it's part of the discipline of the church. And so while, you know, you make sure, for example, if someone doesn't take the Lord's Supper who's a member in good and regular standing, you need to ask a question. You need to let me know. Guess what? Mrs. So-and-so didn't take the Lord's Supper. We need to go and ask her. And either I or the elder would call her up and say, Mrs. Smith, we noticed that you didn't take the Lord's Supper today. Is everything okay? Is there anything that we need to talk about? And then maybe Mrs. Smith says, well, it's just that I felt so sinful. Well, good, you know. She should have taken. What she should do is be repentant. Now, if she said, you know, I've been embezzling work money from work, we'd say, ah, good reason to stop taking the Lord's Supper. Let's talk about it. And let's, you know, then do some counseling. But you might find that she's just a tender conscience, and the thing she needs the most is to take the Lord's Supper in a repentant way when she just feels that she's somehow not worthy of it because of her generally sin in her life. So it can work both ways, but we always have to ask, what's the problem? So it's a kind of pastoral barometer, very, very good way of keeping watch over the flock. Then we also want to make sure that anyone who should not partake doesn't partake. So either unbelievers or people under discipline, they should not partake of the Lord's Supper. Now we really, you know, Janet and Joe Higgins and Janet really need to become members of the church. I think there's a place, and I've loosened up a little bit on this principle, the place when people are in transition from one church to another, that's okay. I will let them partake. But if someone has never made a profession, then no, they must not partake. They are, the Book of Order is crystal clear. So we've got to be careful to make these distinctions. We want to be pastoral in dealing with people, but we also want them to know that it's a very serious business, and it's an institution of the visible church. Not something we can just enjoy without being committed to the body. So, though, you know, those are a couple people that we'll need to, in a category where we really need to encourage them to become members. Yeah, that's where I think they need to be encouraged to become members. We need to let them know. We need to go to them and say, you know, the Lord's Supper really is a privilege for those who have made profession of their faith in public and who are members of the church, who are committed to the local assembly. There's no such thing in the New Testament as membership in the church without being a member of a local or particular church. So I think we need to encourage them. On the other hand, I think we have to be flexible in terms of different people's, you know, their backgrounds and where they've come from. And, you know, these people who are old Westminster members are, you know, they're in a very unique kind of category. I mean, this is sort of like we took over their home. And so we have to give them a kind of extra tender regard. And that's all I have. We're done. Questions? Oh yeah. Good question. I think that when it comes to the fourth membership vow, it's always a good opportunity to explain to people the limits of church power, the limits of the elder's authority. It's real authority, but it's very limited. For example, if I, you know, it says, are you willing to submit in the Lord? To see, there's the limit. In the Lord, you submit to the government of this church, having to do with your spiritual welfare. Now, to ask the diagnostic question, absolutely. That's, if they think that's too personal, then they have a problem. And we may have to explain that to them. We still have to be tender with people. But if I want to know how much money they have in the bank, you know, I mean, that's an extreme example that everyone resonates to, by the way, but that's none of my business. Absolutely none of my business. And, you know, I may And I personally, I would never ask someone if they tithe. But I will always preach that tithing is the biblical way. Oh, yes, absolutely. It's very important to determine that, because if someone's divorced, you want to know, you know, is remarriage in the picture? Is, you know, how to deal with them? Those basic questions are very important normally to know. There might be an exception that I can't think of, but... And I've never really had a problem. I mean, usually I've found that once people get to the point where they trust the session, they trust me, then they're more than happy to open up, because they know that it can only help them. So... But there are definitely boundaries. Other questions? Yeah. Oh, you want me to turn the tape off? Yeah, that's fine. Actually, we're done. And you will never know what we said after this tape is over.